Doing the work on work and money.
For some of us, life is controlled by our thoughts about work and money. But if our thinking is clear, how could work or money be the problem? Our thinking is all we need to change. It's all we can't change. This is very good news. Many of us are motivated by a desire for success. But what is success? What do we want to achieve? We only do three things in life. We stand, we sit, we lie horizontal. Once we've found success, we'll still be sitting somewhere until we stand, and we'll stand until we lie down or sit again. Success is a concept, an illusion. Do you want the $2,000 chair instead of the $20 one? Well, sitting is sitting. Without a stressful story, we're successful wherever we are. Doing the work on job-related issues can have far-reaching consequences. When I work with corporations, I sometimes invite all the employees to judge each other. This is what employees and bosses have always wanted, to know how they look from each other's point of view. And then after the judgments, they all do the work and turn it around. The result can be a startling increase in clarity, honesty, and responsibility. And this, in turn, inevitably leads to a happier, more productive, and more efficient workforce. I once did the work with an executive who said, "My assistant has been with me for 10 years. I know she doesn't do her job well, but she has 5 children." I said, "Good. Keep her here so she can teach the rest of your employees that if they have enough children, they can work for you, whether they do their job well or not." And he said, "Well, I just can't fire her." I said, "I understand that. So put someone qualified in her position, send her home to her 5 children who need her, and send her a paycheck every month. That's more honest than what you're doing now. Guilt is expensive." When the executive read his worksheet to the woman, she agreed with every single thing he had written about her job performance because it was clear and true. And I said to her, "What do you suggest? What would you do if you were your employee?" People usually fire themselves when they realize what's going on, and that's just what she did. She found a similar job in another company closer to her home, where she was able to be both a good assistant and a good mother. The executive realized that he had never investigated the thoughts that led him to be loyal to an assistant who, in reality, had been just as uncomfortable with the situation as he was. I've never seen a work or money problem that didn't turn out to be a thinking problem. I used to believe that I needed money to be happy. Even when I had a lot, I was often sick with the fear that something terrible would happen and I would lose it. I realize now that no amount of money is worth that kind of stress. If you live with the uninvestigated thought, "I need my money to be safe and secure," you're living in a hopeless state of mind. Banks fail, stock markets crash, currencies deflate, people lie, bend contracts, and break their promises. In this confused state of mind, you can make millions of dollars and still be insecure and unhappy. Some people believe that fear and stress are what motivate them to make money. But can you really know that that's true? Can you be absolutely certain that without fear or stress as a motivator, you wouldn't have made the same money or even more? I need fear and stress to motivate me. Who would you be if you never believed that story again? After I found the work inside myself, after it found me, I began to notice that I always had the perfect amount of money for me right now, even when I had little or none. Happiness is a clear mind. A clear and sane mind knows how to live, how to work, what phone calls to make, and what to do to create what it wants without fear. It's a lot easier to make money from this position. In the next dialogue, you'll meet Ruth, whose thoughts about money keep her up at night. Should she invest more in the stock market? Should she sell everything? When you become a lover of what is, there are no more decisions to make about money or anything else. In my life, I just wait and watch. All my decisions are made for me, just as they're all made for you. There is always just one thing to do. Whether you have $10 or $10 million, life never gets more difficult than that.
Okay, honey, let's take a look.
I am frightened and panicked to the point of paralysis about making decisions about my money, about whether to stay in the market or getting out because of the current volatility and my future depending upon it.
Your future depends on your money. Can you really know that that's true?
No, but a lot of me goes frantic about it.
Your future depends on your money, the money in that you have invested. How do you live when you think that thought?
In a panicky state, in a high anxiety state.
Who would you be without that thought? My future depends on this money I have invested in the market.
A much more relaxed person. My body wouldn't be so tense.
Give me a reason to keep the thought that is not stressful.
There isn't one that's not stressful, and the not thinking about it is a different kind of stress, like I'm being irresponsible then. So either way.
Sweetheart, how can you not think about something? It's thinking you. Thought appears. How can not thinking about it be irresponsible? You either think about it or you don't. It appears or it doesn't. It's just amazing that you think after how many years you can control your thinking. Can you control the wind too?
Yeah, I can't control my thinking.
What about the ocean?
No.
No. Let's stop the waves. Not likely.
No.
Except when you're asleep, they stop.
The thoughts?
Waves.
Waves.
No thought, no ocean. No stock market. How irresponsible of you to go to sleep at night.
I don't sleep very well. I'm up since 5.
Yeah, it's irresponsible. Thinking will solve all your problems. Has that been your experience?
No. No.
So let's stay up and get some more of that.
I can't control my thinking. I've been trying for years. I can't control my thinking.
This is a very good find. I think to meet it with understanding is as good as it's going to get. And there's a lot of humor in it and a good night's rest.
I need some humor around this. I definitely need some humor around this.
So without this stressful thinking, you would not make the right decision. Can you really know that that's true?
No, no. Seems quite the opposite would be true.
Let's experience how it feels to do a 180-degree turnaround. My future depends on the money I have invested in the stock market.
My future does not depend upon the money I have invested in the stock market.
So just feel it. That could be just as true. When you get all this money and you're just an absolute success in the market, you have more money than you can ever spend, what are you going to have? Happiness? Isn't that what the money's for? Security? Then you'll be happy. A little comfort, a little pleasure. Then you'll be happy. Who would you be without the story, my future depends on this money in the stock market?
I would be much happier. I'd be more relaxed. It'd be more fun to be around.
You'd have everything you wanted money for in the first place.
That's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give me a reason to keep this thought. My future depends on the money I have invested in the stock market.
There isn't one.
The only future you want is happiness.
That was my child prayer, for just peace and happiness.
Yes, honey. So the very thing you seek keeps you from the awareness of what you already have.
Yeah, I've always been living, trying to live in the future, to fix it, to make it safe and secure.
Yeah.
And it is.
You know, this realization is happiness, peace. Self-realization is always the way through any perception of there's something the matter. Because it's not possible that anything could be the matter. If I would see something as a problem, I'm confused. That's what stress is for. It's the reminder to go to inquiry. Because in that is a possibility. One of two things, we're either attaching to the nightmare or we're investigating. Not a choice. Thoughts appear. It's how are you going to meet them? And I love the stock market is not going to cooperate with you. That's what everything is for. It leaves you to your own solution. So, sweetheart, when you get all this money and you're happy, what are you going to do? You're going to sit, stand, or lie horizontal. That's about it. And you're going to witness the story running now because you haven't taken care of it in the way that it deserves, and that is to meet it with understanding.
I get the sense that's all there is to do.
Yeah, sit, stand, lie down a little. But the story we're running as we're doing it, that's it. Take a look at that. Because when you get all this money and you have everything that you ever wanted, what appears is what appears in this chair now. This is what you're running. There's no happiness in it. Let's look at the next one, honey.
I don't want to be having to decide where to invest, and I don't trust others.
You have to decide where to invest. Can you really know that that's true?
No. I could just leave it alone and see what it does. Just leave it alone totally. A lot of me says that's best.
You have to make decisions in life. Is that true? People need to make decisions in life. Can you really know that that's true?
It feels like I need to, but as you say it, I'm not sure.
You would have to feel that way. You're attached to the thought.
Yeah. The thought of not having to make decisions sounds glorious.
That's my experience. I don't make decisions. They're made. It comes to me, it's done.
It was real clear to come here. And there wasn't,
yeah.
It wasn't a should I, shouldn't I? It was just like, yeah, time works, go.
So how was that decision made?
I don't know.
Maybe it just made itself. You just move your head like that. Did you make that decision?
No.
You just did that. Did you make that decision?
No.
No. You need to make decisions. Is that true? Maybe things are just moving right along. You know, without our help. Maybe these decisions are making themselves. And we're telling the story of, I made the decision. I should have made another decision. I'm doing it right. I'm doing it wrong.
It's that since my insanity of needing to control.
Yeah. You know, I like to say, who needs God when you have you? Who needs a higher order when you are running it?
I don't want to. I don't know how.
This is direct opposition, and it feels fatal. It feels like stress. How does it feel when you react to the thought, I need to make a decision?
Horrible. Just horrible.
That's a very interesting place to even attempt to make a decision, if we could.
It
interesting.
I mean, we can't even decide to stop. Give me a reason to keep the thought, I need to make a decision. And I'm not asking you to stop making decisions. This is a part of the gentleness of a flower opening to itself. You know, good you think you make decisions. This work is not about that. We're just taking a look at possibilities here.
Would it work as an experiment not to decide anything for a period of time? Is that a craziness, well, or is that...
Sweetheart, you just made a decision, and it may change itself. And then you can say, I changed my mind.
I'm still caught in the same ugly loop.
I don't know. But it's interesting to watch, to observe. If I say, I just won't make a decision, then I've just made a decision, I think. You see, so just to kind of watch, that's what the inquiry is for. This is not a way. Yeah. They're just questions that take us into a world that some of us haven't even begun to tap, even though that is the only world that exists. And we're the last to know.
I get glimmers of it, and it's feeling like that now against a background of that was a control trying to do it as an experiment, and that's deciding.
Give me a reason to keep the thought, I need to make a decision, that is not stressful.
I can't come up with any.
Who would you be without this thought? I need to make a decision.
I wouldn't be like my anxious mother. I wouldn't be becoming more and more insane. I wouldn't feel like I had to isolate from people because I was too awful to be around.
Oh, honey. I love you've discovered inquiry.
I'm trying so hard and something doesn't work.
I need to make a decision. Turn it around.
I don't need to make decisions.
Yes. Believe me, they will be made. And the piece of that is clear. They have a life, and it's like a laser. Life will give you everything you need to go deeper. The decision will be made. You act on it. The worst that can happen is a story. If you don't act on it, the worst that can happen is a story. The worst that has ever happened is a story. You lose all your money, you're going to sit somewhere. You make millions of dollars, you're going to sit somewhere. And thoughts appear. And in that, you find your wealth or your poverty. So simple. There's no hunger in it. There's no thirst in it. No need for health in it. And it makes its own decision. When to eat, when to sleep. It just kind of roams around, it appears. But it's very peaceful and entirely successful. It allows me to sit here with you now. That's all I need to know. My heart's desire. And the sweetness of where my hand is. My fingers. My funny shoes. So good. You feel it?
Yeah.
Feel where your hand is. And your
feet. Yeah, I just feel my hands and feet and my back.
It's good. But only everywhere you sit. Anytime you sit, you have this. It's a gift. Just waiting to be noticed. It's called love. Everlasting. I don't know where this stuff comes from. Everlasting? Let's look at the next one.
I don't want money in the stock market to be so irrational. Hopeless. I'm hopeless.
Money in the stock market is irrational.
I'm irrational.
Yeah, when you see it that way, that's very frightening. So money's irrational. The stock market is irrational. Can you really know that that's true?
No.
How do you react when you think that thought?
With fear. With being out of my body. Mm-hmm.
Can you see a reason to drop this thought? And I'm not asking you to drop it. Those of you new to the work, you know, you can't drop it. You can think you do, and then it appears and brings the same fear with it that it did before, maybe a little more, because we're a little more attached. So what I say is simply, can you see a reason to drop this thought? The stock market is irrational.
I can see a reason. That doesn't mean that I have to do it, is what I...
Absolutely.
I can see a reason.
Yeah, this is about realization, not changing anything. As you realize, the world changes because you're the projector that looks out to see what the projector is. It's imaging back. So as you realize what is true for you, the mere image has to change. In other words, the world as you perceive it to be. That's just how it is. Mm. Clarity, for me, is a word for beauty. And when I'm clear, I see only beauty. Because I am the projector perceiving. And everything comes from that. If I am not clear, then I am going to project all that craziness as a world. So we don't drop the thought of this nightmare out there because we didn't make it in the first place. We can't drop what we didn't bring about. So when we meet it with understanding, the world changes. That's it, because you are the projector of the entire world. Let's look at the next one, honey.
Decisions shouldn't be so difficult or frightening.
Is that true? Are they?
They are when I work hard to make them. And when
you're trying to make
happen.
Them ahead of their time, it's as you said, hopeless. You cannot make you make a decision ahead of its time. The decision is made when it is. Mm-hmm. Not one breath sooner. Don't you love it?
Yeah, yeah. That one's, the shoulders are coming out of my ears in hearing that.
And you could sit there and just... Oh, I need to do something. I need to do something with that stock market. Is it true? I can't really know that. Mm. You know, you just let it have you. You just sit there with what your passion is and read, listen. Let it educate you, and the decision will come from that. Mm. It's a beautiful thing. But I just love to let it, the world, educate me. You see, you don't make the decision to maybe read this magazine. It comes to you to read the magazine that's sitting there. Mm-hmm. And then just be educated. That's all you know, just follow your passion. Do what you love.
Sometimes I can't read. I'm losing pieces of memory and losing the ability
honey,
to track.
Oh, honey, you've been spared.
Sometimes I think that. Sometimes I think that. And sometimes it's horribly frightening.
Well, what's the worst that could happen if you lost your mind? You'd lose all your money in the stock market.
Yeah, and not having money to have people take care of me when I'm needing it.
If you don't have money to pay people to take care of you, you will not be taken care of. Can you really know that that's true?
No. When it's happened before, I didn't ask for any help. Now I can ask.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that's true. Yeah, and that's the worst.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
You can ask and we'll say yes or no. Yeah. You need to be taken care of if you have no mind or you're ill. You need to be taken care of. Can you really know that that's true?
No. No, it's a scary story. It's just a scary story.
Yes, The worst that can happen if no one comes and you're lying there ill is a thought. You have inquiry, honey. You do this a while, it awakes inside of you. You're free. You lie on the floor, a thought appears, I need help, and inquiry is awake. It leaves you in peace, which is what everyone with health wants. Let's look at your number six.
I don't ever want to panic over money in the stock market and indecision again.
I'm willing
to panic over money in the stock market and indecision.
I look forward to. Could happen.
I look forward to panicking over money in the stock market.
Yes, because, honey, that'll put you back into the work.
Yeah, that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's the purpose of stress. It's a friend. It's an alarm clock built in to let you know it's time to do the work. Time to inquire. You're not free in the moment. It's time to set yourself free. So you investigate and get back to what you are. Mm. What waits to be recognized, what's true and what's real now.
Just as we use stress and fear to motivate ourselves to make money, we often rely on anger and frustration to move us to social activism. If I want to act sanely and effectively while I clean up the Earth's environment, let me begin by cleaning up my own environment, all the trash and pollution in my thinking. Let me clean that up by meeting it with love and understanding. Then my action can become truly effective. It takes just one person to help the planet. That one is you. When I work in prisons, there will be maybe 200 men from a cell block sitting there, looking down at the floor with their arms folded across their chests. I do the work with them, and then the guards bring in another 200. These are all hardcore, violent men. Many of them are in prison with life sentences for rape and murder, and I'm the only woman in the room. I don't say a word until they make eye contact with me. This is not easy for them to do. There is some kind of unspoken code that they have to keep people like me out of their culture. But I just stand in front of them, waiting for eye contact. I may walk into the rows and pace slowly up and down as I wait for just one man to look me in the eyes. The moment it happens, the moment one man does that, he always looks down really fast, but it's too late. There was contact. No one but me has seen his glance. It happened so fast that there's no way the others can see that it happened. And yet, immediately, the code begins to break down all over the room. Two or three others look me in the eyes, then another eight, then another dozen. And then everyone is looking at me, laughing, turning red, saying things to one another like,
"Shit."
Or,
"Man, she crazy."
And it's done. Now I can speak to them and give them the work, and all because one man dared to look me in the eyes. I love thanking these men for sacrificing their entire lives to teach our children how not to live, and therefore how to live if they want to be free. I tell them that they are the greatest teachers and that their lives are good and needed. Before I leave, I ask them, "Would you spend the rest of your life in prison if you knew that it would keep one child from having to live what you're living?" And many of these violent men understand, and they just well up with tears like sweet little boys. There is nothing we can do that doesn't help the planet. That's the way it really is.
Doing the work on self-judgments.
1 year for his birthday, I bought my grandson, Race, a plastic Darth Vader toy because he had asked for it. He had just turned 3. He didn't have a clue about Star Wars, even though he wanted the Darth Vader toy. When you put a coin into Darth Vader, you hear the Star Wars music and Darth Vader's heavy breathing. Then his voice says, "Impressive, but you are not a Jedi yet. And he lifts his sword as if to emphasize the point. After Racy heard the voice, he said, Grandma, I'm not a Jedi, and shook his little head. I said, Honey, you can be Grandma's little Jedi. And he said, I'm not, and shook his head again. A week or so after I gave him the toy, I called him on the phone and asked him, Sweetheart, are you a Jedi yet? Are you Grandma's little Jedi? And he said, in a sad little voice, I'm not. He didn't even know what a Jedi was. He wasn't even asking, and yet he wanted it. So the little guy was taking orders from a plastic toy and was walking around disappointed at the ripe old age of 3. Shortly after this, I was invited by a friend to fly over the desert in his plane. I told my friend about the Jedi thing and asked if Racy could come with us. He said yes, smiling over an idea he had. My friend made arrangements with the ground crew so that as we landed, we heard a voice over the cabin speakers announcing, Racy, you are a Jedi. You are a Jedi now. Racy rolled his little eyes in disbelief. I asked him if he was a Jedi yet. He wouldn't answer me. When we got home, he ran straight to Darth Vader. He dropped in his coin, the music began, and the deep voice said, Impressive. But you are not a Jedi yet. That seemed to be the way of it. I asked him one more time, and he told me, Grandma, I'm not. Most little 3-year-olds don't know how to do inquiry yet. Many of us judge ourselves as relentlessly as that plastic toy played its recording, telling ourselves over and over what we are and what we are not. Once investigated, these self-judgments simply melt away. I have yet to see a self-judgment that upon investigation didn't reveal innocence. Innocence in others and innocence in ourselves. If you've been following the instructions and have done the work by pointing the finger of blame outward, you will have noticed that your judgments of others always turn back toward you. When those turned around judgments feel uncomfortable, then you know that you've hit a belief about yourself that you haven't investigated yet. For example, he should love me turns around to, I should love myself. And if you experience stress with that thought, you may want to take a look at it. As you become fluid with the 4 questions and turnaround, you'll begin to discover for yourself that the work is equally powerful when the one you're judging is yourself. You'll see that the you judge is no more personal than everyone else turned out to be. The work deals with concepts, not people. The 4 questions are used in exactly the same way when you apply them to self-judgments. For example, let's consider the self-judgment, I am a failure. First, go inside with questions 1 and 2. Is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true that I'm a failure? My husband or wife may say so, my parents may say so, and I may say so, but can I absolutely know that it's true? Could it be that all along I have lived the life I should have lived and that everything I've done has been what I should have done? Then move on to question 3. Make a list of how you react, how you feel physically, and how you treat yourself and others when you believe the thought, I am a failure. What do you do specifically? What do you say specifically? Do your shoulders slump? Do you go to the refrigerator? Continue with your list. Then go inside with question 4. Experience what your life would be like if you never had this thought again. Close your eyes and picture how you would be without the thought, I am a failure. Be still as you watch. What do you see? The turnarounds for self-judgments can be quite radical. When you use the 180-degree turnaround, I am a failure becomes I am not a failure, or I am a success. Go inside with this turnaround and let it reveal to you how it is as true as, or truer than, your original statement. Make a list of the ways in which you are a success. Bring those truths out of the darkness. Some of us find this extremely difficult at first and may be hard-pressed to find even one example. Take your time. If you really want to know the truth, allow the truth to reveal itself to you. Find three successes each day. One could be, I brushed my teeth. Two, I did the dishes. Three, I breathed. It's a wonderful thing to be a success at being what you are, whether you realize it or not. Sometimes replacing the word I with my thinking will bring a realization. I am a failure becomes my thinking is a failure, especially about myself. You can understand this clearly when you go inside to answer question 4. Without the thought, I am a failure, aren't you perfectly fine? It's the thought that is painful, not your life. In reality, you've never been a failure. Don't get stuck in the turnarounds, as if there's a right or wrong way of doing them. If a turnaround doesn't work for you, don't worry. This is as it should be. Just move on to the next statement. Inquire sincerely and let the turnarounds find you. In the next dialogue, you'll meet a brave man named Chris who has spent months in bed, depressed and suicidal. He has been playing the same thoughts over and over in his mind. I'm worthless. I'm making the wrong choices. I don't deserve to live. These are some of the thoughts that once kept me from leaving my bedroom. It's hard to move when you're trapped under the weight of uninvestigated beliefs. But when you inquire into even one of these beliefs, you open up the possibility of freedom.
So, sweetheart, let's hear what you've written.
The first one I wrote was, I am sad and angry at myself because I'm not able to take care of myself.
Is that true? You're not able to take care of yourself. Is that true?
Not entirely.
So give me an example of where you are not able to take care of yourself.
I'm at risk of colon cancer and I don't eat as well as I probably should.
Yeah. So, sweetheart, you don't eat as well as you should. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
No.
And how does it feel when you think that thought, I'm not eating the way that I should eat?
I'm killing myself.
Yeah. And how does that feel?
Familiar.
Yeah. And how do you think you have the best shot at any kind of physical recovery? When you're in stress and fear or when you're open?
When I'm open.
Okay. So, who would you be without this story?
Healthy and happy.
Yeah. You know, that could do you more good than even certain foods.
Right. I believe that.
Yeah. And the foods would be good. And how are you going to make the clearest food choices when you're in fear and stress or when you're in peace?
When I'm at peace.
Yeah. It's easy to make food choices. There's no stress in it. Let's look at the next one.
I want me to nourish my body and being and create a happy and affordable lifestyle.
Okay, that's a wonderful thing. And turn it around, there could be something you prefer.
I prefer me to nourish my body and being.
My thinking.
I want me to nourish my thinking and being and create a happy and affordable lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you work with the mind and the body follows. And in the meantime, you're working with your body also. But this is it. This is it. When you're sane, everything makes sense. And life becomes very, very simple. Let's look at the next one.
I should stop obsessing about killing myself when I feel overwhelmed or have no money.
Is that true?
Seems like a good idea.
Uh-huh. You should stop obsessing over that. Is it true? Do you obsess over that?
It can fill days of my life.
Okay. So that's what is. That's reality. How do you react when you think the thought, I should stop that? What happens to your suicidal tendencies, your suicidal mind, when you have the thought, I should stop obsessing over this? What happens? Where does your mind go when you think that thought? Does it obey? I should stop. Oh, okay. I stopped that.
No.
Where does the mind travel when you think the thought, I should stop obsessing over killing myself?
I obsess more.
Oh, yeah. So tell me, let's track it. I should stop obsessing over killing myself. Then where does the mind travel?
I'm bad.
Keep going.
I'm weak. I'm not good enough.
Keep going. It keeps going, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, I'm worthless. I don't deserve to be here.
Yeah. Oh, sweetheart. Same path.
Same path?
That was my path. That was my path. That was my religion. I'm worthless. I don't deserve to be here. That was my path. Yeah, a lot of years. Oh. So, sweetheart, I invite you to write those down and put every one of those up against inquiry. Not to save your life, not to stop obsessing, but go in for the love of truth. You're worthless. Can you really know that that's true?
I know that's not true.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Because I can help other people.
You're doing that right now. You know, you're affecting us. You are us sitting up here. You know, we're just not able to sit up here and say what you're saying yet. You know, so thank you for that.
I've actually realized that's the benefit about obsessing over killing myself, is I have a lot more courage than I probably would have if I didn't have that experience.
Yeah, you have a lot of courage just to keep breathing with those thoughts. It's incredibly courageous. I contribute by breathing. Everything is medicine, and the air has to come in and out of these lungs to have the perfect world, and so does yours. Because there's no mistake in anything. Your heart beats. It all works together for one. So there's nothing I can do to be worthless. The way you're sitting is necessary for the synchronicity of everything. There's no way we can be worthless.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, anything.
The thing that I wrestle with about me being good enough is, am I still making the right choice? Like, if I decide to blow off the night and watch TV instead of, you know, writing a letter to my therapist to get my brothers in therapy and move things forward. So, you know, downtime. I've spent months in bed rereading the same novels just to keep myself alive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I feel guilty about those choices.
Okay. So it comes to you to write the letter. You want to write the letter. Is it true?
Yeah. I'm scared.
And do you?
No.
Okay, you want to write the letter. Is it true?
I don't want to write the letter. I'm scared to write the letter.
Yeah, it's like this. See, the lie is, I want to write the letter. That's the lie. If you want to write the letter, you do it. That's how you know you want to write the letter. Like, I want to stand up. I mean, seriously, I want to stand up. I want to stand up. God, what's the matter with me? I'm so stupid. I'm so worthless. I can't. Everybody else gets to stand up. I can't stand. Oh, I just want to stand up. It's like that. It's all a lie. It's a lie. And I get depressed and depressed and depressed because I'm lying to myself and lying to myself. Here's the truth. I want to stand up. Now it's true. That's it. You understand? The thought comes in, write the letter, write it. Misspell it. Don't mail it. It's not even legible. It doesn't matter. You write the letter, then you watch television. That's how you know you want to write the letter.
So I'm lying to myself when I say that I want to write the letter.
Only totally. So you see what this does? It stops mind. I want to write the letter. And you may find, without the lie, you just move to it. It's an act of self-love. But it was like this for me. I got this work, it woke up inside of me, and then I would still lie in bed, and I'd have the thought, brush your teeth.
I'm losing my gums because I can't floss my teeth.
I understand it. So, brush your teeth. And used to on top of that, what for? I'm so worthless. I want to kill myself. I don't want to be here. No one cares. Life sucks anyway. You know, I couldn't get up. All these were piled on me, and there was no investigation. So when inquiry was awake in me, I heard the voice, brush your teeth. And then the others would start, but I would follow its direction. And I would do it on my hands and knees. To follow is like the voice of God. I would follow it on my hands and knees, knowing I could die on the way. And I would do it. And I would get to my toothbrush, and I did not care about cavities. I was following direction. And I would just do it. And something began to happen to mind. And then it would be like, I'd have the thought, call your friend. I'd move toward the phone, and someone would knock at the door, and then I would move from phone over to the door. And then maybe I'd have the thought, like someone would say, help me over here, and I would just move over. And it all worked, because I only did one thing at a time, and it was never too much. I could have a stack of mail like this, but I only did the one on top, because there's only one to do, ever. There's only one thing to do. I don't have to do two things. That was too much for me.
So when you're going to make the call and the door rings and you let go of going to make the call and you're answering the door?
Because it just doesn't matter. I'm following direction. I don't care what it is. If life is chaos, I'm for it. I'm going to do one thing. And I've never done more than one thing since. Because nothing more is required. Like, oh, there's so much to do. No, there's only one thing to do now. That's it. And it's never too much. I promise. It's just the mind that says it's too much. I just do one thing. How do you react when you think the thought that you're worthless?
I'm going to cry.
Does that thought bring stress or peace into your life?
Stress.
Who would you be without your story?
Pretty amazing person.
Yeah, you are anyway. It's just that you would realize it. Mm-hmm. You are waiting to be realized, my angel. I am worthless. Turn it around.
I am invaluable.
You're so beautiful.
Thank you.
Privileged to sit with you.
Thank you for making the time and the space.
I'd like to take the credit, I just can't.
Doing the work with children.
I'm often asked if children and teenagers can do the work. My answer is, of course they can. In this process of inquiry, we're not dealing with people, we're dealing with thoughts. And people of all ages, 8 or 80, have the same stressful thoughts and concepts. I want my mother to love me. I need my friend to listen to me. People shouldn't be mean. Young or old, we believe concepts that, through inquiry, are seen to be nothing more than superstitions. I have found that even young children can find the work life-changing. During one workshop for children, a 6-year-old girl got so excited that she said, "This work is amazing. Why didn't anyone ever tell me about it?" Another child, a 7-year-old boy, said to his mother, "The work is the best thing in the whole wide world." Curious, she asked, "What is it that you like so much about the work, Daniel?" He said, "When I'm scared and we do the work, afterward, I'm not scared anymore. When I do the work with young children, the only difference I'm aware of is that I draw from a simpler vocabulary. If I use a word that I think might be beyond them, I ask them if they understand it. If I feel that they really don't understand, then I say what I mean in another way. But I never use baby talk. Children know when they are being talked down to." Here's an example of what doing the work with a 5-year-old girl might sound like.
"There's a monster under my bed."
"There's a monster under your bed, sweetheart. Is that true?"
"Yes."
"Sweetheart, look at me. Can you absolutely know that it's true?"
"Yes."
"Give me your proof. Have you ever seen the monster?"
"Yes."
"Is that true?"
"Yes."
At this point, the child is beginning to laugh and warm up to the questions, beginning to trust that I'm not going to force her to believe or not to believe, and we can have fun with this monster of hers. Eventually, the monster has a personality, and before the end of the session, I'll ask the child to close her eyes, talk to the monster face to face, and let the monster tell her what he's doing under the bed and what he really wants from her. I'll ask her just to let the monster talk and to tell me what the monster said. I've done this with a dozen children afraid of monsters or ghosts. They always report something kind, such as, "He says he's lonely," or "He just wants to play," or "He wants to be with me." At this point, I can ask them, "Sweetheart, there's a monster under your bed. Is that true?" And they usually look at me with a kind of knowing amusement that I would believe such a ridiculous thing. There's a lot of laughter. Parents always report that after the session, the nightmares stop occurring. I also hear that parents don't have to talk their children into coming back to see me. We share an understanding together as a result of inquiry. I once worked with a 4-year-old boy, David, at his parents' request. They had been taking him to a psychiatrist because he seemed so intent on hurting his baby sister. They always had to keep track of him. Whenever he had the chance, he would attack her, even in front of the parents. He would poke her, pull her, try to push her off surfaces, and he was old enough to know that she would fall. They saw him as seriously disturbed. He was getting angrier and angrier. The parents were at their wits' end. In our session, I asked David some of the questions on the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, and the mother's therapist wrote down his answers. Meanwhile, his parents did the work in another room. When they returned, I had them read their worksheets on each other in front of their son so that he could understand there would be no punishment for expressing his feelings honestly.
"I'm angry at the new baby because I have to change her diapers all day long and can't spend more time with my David. I'm angry at Dad because he works all day and can't help me change diapers for the new baby."
Both mother and father continued to judge each other and the baby in front of the little boy. Then it was David's turn to read his statements out loud.
"I'm angry at Mommy because she spends all her time with Kathy. I'm angry at Daddy because he's not home enough."
Finally, we heard his statements about his little sister.
"I'm angry at Kathy because she doesn't want to play games with me. I want her to play ball with me. She should play with me."
"She should play with you. Honey, is that true?"
"Yes."
"David, sweetheart, how does it feel when you think that thought?"
"I'm mad. I want her to play with me."
"How did you learn that babies should play ball with you?"
"My mommy and daddy."
As soon as they heard the answer, his parents knew what was happening. Throughout the entire pregnancy, they had told this little fellow that soon he would have a brother or sister who would play games with him and be there as his playmate. What they had failed to tell him was that the baby would have to grow before she could run or hold a ball. When they explained this to David and apologized to him, he of course understood. He left her alone after that. They later informed me that the troubling behavior had stopped, that they were all working on clear communication, and that he was beginning to trust them again. I love working with children. They come to inquiry so easily, just as we all do when we really want to be free.